I'm Carson Stooley. With me is Fangraphs Managing Editor Dave Cameron, and this is the Pitch Talks Blue Jays podcast. Dave Cameron, I believe this is the sixth episode of the Pitch Talk Blue Jays podcast. Hello, how are you doing, Dave Cameron?
I'm good, how are you?
Good, I'm doing well. Here we are to provide an objective look at the Toronto Blue Jays. You're Dave Cameron, you write for Fangraphs, you're the editor of Fangraphs. I'm Carson Stooley, I'm someone who's not the editor of Fangraphs, I am the podcast host of Fangraphs Audio, though.
You're an editor of Fangraphs.
An editor, right. It is my obligation at this point, Dave Cameron, right here at the beginning of the program, to draw attention to the sponsor of this weekly program, the Blue Jays Pitch Talks podcast, and that is the company that facilitates the Pitch Talks events, Dave Cameron, Homeland Sports.
Homestand Sports.
Yes, you're right. Homestand Sports, Dave Cameron, as I said.
I'm not sure if it's a sponsor as much as like a patron.
Oh, that's a good point. Yes, our patron.
Yeah.
Oh, yes, that's right. Yeah, we work for them. That's right. Now, most relevant to our experience here is that Homestand Sports, as I say, facilitates these Pitch Talks events. Dave Cameron, would you illuminate me and the people as to what a Pitch Talk event is?
It is a gathering of baseball fans to talk about baseball, particularly in their hometown. So whatever the major league team closest to their town is, we usually focus on that. So like recently, the tour has gone through Chicago, where they talked a lot about the Cubs. The White Sox were less interesting. In Washington, D.C., we talked a lot about the Nationals. An upcoming event in Seattle, we'll talk about the Mariners. So it is a gathering of fans who want to discuss baseball at large and then the local team as well for 2 or 3 hours, drinking adult beverages, and generally have a good time.
Right. It's not necessarily adult entertainment, as you suggested last week.
Very poor phrasing on my part.
Yeah, that's right. All right. Well, allow me to inform you, Dave Cameron, about some upcoming Pitch Talks events. There's one this Thursday, May 18th. In St. Louis, that's at 7 p.m., and it features, among others, Derek Gould, a very excellent beat reporter for the Cardinals, and also Craig Edwards, a very excellent contributor to Fangraphs.com.
That's right.
In addition to that, there is a Pitch Talks event. Yes, agreed. I'm going to mention that. There's a Pitch Talks event in Seattle, Monday, June 5th. That also begins at 7 p.m., one presumes 7 p.m. Pacific time, which will feature, some great participants, including Megan Rowley, Kate Prusser, who's written for Fangraphs, Patrick Dubuque, who's also written for Fangraphs, and then you and Jeff Sullivan.
Yeah, the less great portion of the show.
The less great. And I believe that is at a venue called Numos or Numas. What do you think?
I'm going to go with Numos.
Yeah, all right. That sounds fine. Once again, that is Monday, June 5th. And then two very exciting events occurring in the Toronto area, both at the Sport Gallery. We see on June 8th, the Sport Gallery, John Thorne, official historian of MLB baseball. John Thorne will be June 8th, 7 p.m. And then later in the month, June 26th, Keith Law. Keith Law is the lead prospect analyst for ESPN.com, and he'll appear also at the Sport Gallery. And in that case, that will be at 7 p.m. as well. So there are some upcoming Pitch Talks events. Tickets are available, Dave Cameron. Would you like to know? It's not Homeland Sports. It's HomestandSports.com.
Yeah, Homeland Sports would be something like running away from, immigration officers or something.
Yeah.
Like, who can do the 40-yard dash away from ICE?
Yeah, that's dark. That's a dark thought you've had, Dave Cameron. Allow us to draw attention to the week that was for the Toronto Blue Jays. Of course, we have mentioned on a number of occasions here. Well, certainly listeners of this program don't need to be reminded that the beginning of the season has not been an ideal one for the Toronto Blue Jays. However, it has been a nearly ideal week. A club that was expected to do well has fared poorly. However, has rendered their postseason chances even worse in the process. However, over the last week, the Toronto Blue Jays faced a difficult Cleveland team and probably a less difficult Seattle team. But they came away with 6 wins in 7 chances. Dave Cameron, what does this do for a Blue Jays team about whom you have already invoked the idea of a possible sell-off at the deadline?
Yeah, I mean, they had a big hole to dig out of from that first couple of weeks where they started 2-10. And I think when we were talking our first few episodes of this podcast, is that they were going to need a counteracting good run, where they were going to need to win a lot of games in a hurry in order to kind of balance out those early losses. And this is, you know, this is a great start, winning 6 of 7, especially against some good competition in Cleveland and then obviously some less good competition in Seattle. But these are the kinds of weeks that they need. They probably need another one or two of these in order to kind of get back to where we thought they were going to be preseason. So this doesn't dig themselves entirely out of the hole, but it erases at least one of the two bad weeks they had at the start of the year. And now they can say, okay, look, you know, we're another, you know, strong week or a good winning streak away from getting back to 500. And once you're at 500, you know, then it's not that hard to convince yourself you're a contender. So the Blue Jays have done, probably half of the work they need to do in order to erase their early season struggles. They're not all the way there yet, but certainly this last week was a very good start.
Yeah, well, it's interesting. You mentioned, they've erased one of the early weeks. Now, in going 6-1, of course, they've, for the course of the week, they've been above, five games above 500, which is, of course, a very good run, and essentially knocks five games off of their attempt to return to average, to exactly a 500 winning percentage. So as you point out, there is a sort of canceling effect. Yeah. That's what you said.
Yeah, should I just agree with myself?
Yeah, that's right.
I made a good point earlier, and I agree with that point.
Yeah, you did. Yeah. Good job, Dave.
Thanks.
Kierman.
Thanks for highlighting it.
Among the positive indications from this past week is one of them was also a positive indication the week before when we mentioned it when we spoke, and that is, of course, a performance by Joe Biagini, a starting performance by Joe Biagini, his second start in as many appearances, and also his second career major league start. In this one, he was not necessarily dominant in the sense that he was striking everyone out. He only recorded three of those against 19 batters, but he did go another inning. He went five innings after going four the week before. He faced 19 batters as opposed to 15, so there's a bit more endurance being exhibited there, or at least the team was willing to let him stay out there for a little bit longer, and he allowed only four hits and allowed zero runs. So very positive, Dave Cameron. What does this portend, do you think, for the future of Joe Biagini and the Toronto Blue Jays rotation?
Yeah, but Biagini is interesting in that he throws a 95-mile-an-hour sinker, and he's been able to hold that as a starter, even as a short stint starter to this point, but his stuff has not dramatically dropped off from where it was in the bullpen. And if he can throw strikes and get ground balls, I mean, this is essentially the Aaron Sanchez skill set, right? Like, Sanchez obviously has good breaking stuff and can miss bats occasionally, but Sanchez is mostly just a ground ball guy who tries not to walk people and get by, and Biagini's kind of, in his first two starts, pitched not too differently than that. I don't think Biagini is going to become Aaron Sanchez, but you can see that there's a template for this kind of starter working in the major leagues, is if you pitch to the bottom of the zone and throw strikes and don't walk guys and get ground balls, you don't have to strike everybody out in order to be a good major league pitcher. You have to get enough strikeouts to kind of stay away from, like, Ricky Romero territory. Sorry, Blue Jays fans, for bringing up that name. But I think Biagini so far has encouraged the Blue Jays that this might be something that could actually work.
Yeah. Now, what do we have in terms of health with regard to the Blue Jays rotation? I know at some points we were looking at Casey Lawrence and Matt Latos. They have both departed. We have Joe Biagini, but that would seem to indicate that there's still someone out unhealthy.
Francisco Liriano has left his last start after getting shellacked and said his shoulder hurts, so he's on the disabled list. Jay Happ has still not returned, but Aaron Sanchez is now back. Marcus Stroman is still pitching well. Marco Estrada is pitching pretty well. So potentially if Biagini keeps pitching well and Happ returns, maybe Francisco Liriano is the one who goes to the bullpen when he returns.
Well, yeah, that was going to be my next question, which is if Joe Biagini if he never allows a run, or an earned run at least, as he's done over his first two appearances as a starter, what the team's response would be then. And I don't know, what do we know about guys who go from getting stretched out and then go back to the bullpen if there's any sort of lag? I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know that it's been studied super well. I would think that Biagini, they've been talking about potentially converting him since last year. They're not going to unconvert him if he's pitching well. He's a guy with potentially long-term value to the organization, where Liriano's a free agent this winter. I would think that if they have to choose between them, like, generally there's enough guys getting hurt that you can make six starters work. The Dodgers are currently making 10 starters work. So they probably won't have to make this choice. But if it comes down to it and they're like, look, we're sticking with a five-man rotation, Biagini's pitching well. Happ is back. We've got our other three. Francisco Liriano will either stay on the DL and just kind of work through things in the minor leagues on a rehab stint, or when he comes back, he might get slotted into long relief and wait for someone to get hurt.
I would like to ask you about Justin Smoke as well. He's been a bit mercurial, really, ever since he entered the big leagues, I guess, 2010, 2011. He's made a couple of visits to the minor leagues in the meantime. When he was coming up with the Texas Rangers, I mean, that's how I remember him, as a fresh-faced youth, probably around 22, 23 at that point. He had at least one half season where he was absolutely dominating minor league pitching. And his entire career since then has been a mostly mediocre one. He has been roughly a league-average hitter, has exhibited above-average power. But relative to his position, of course, he's relegated to first base DH. The production really hasn't been sufficient to outweigh the sort of positional adjustment that such a player receives. However, through a month and a half of this season, he's recorded basically, on a rate basis, the best power numbers of his career. He's striking out less than he has in an era that is seeing, and it's certainly probably in a season, this season, last season, that is seeing more strikeouts than ever. It seems as though Smoke playing well is pretty ideal for a Blue Jays team that has had problems getting production from Jose Bautista, of course, and has had to suffer through Josh Donaldson's injury.
Yeah, but this is one of the main reasons the team was able to do well over the last week, or the last few weeks, is Smoke has really kind of turned his season around. And, he didn't start terribly, but he wasn't killing the ball early in the season. No one was for the Blue Jays. Their offense was pretty terrible in April. Smoke has gotten hot lately, and I think the interesting thing to notice is, like, his contact rate, which contact rate is usually pretty steady. This is not something that varies that dramatically. Smoke has generally been in the low 70% range, which is below average. Usually the guys who strike out the low seven or make contact in the low 70% range, they usually strike out, between 25-35% of the time, depending on how aggressive they are swinging up pitches out of the zone, which lines up with Smoke's history. This year, his contact rate has jumped to 82%, which is now above the league average, I believe, or at least close to it. And so for a guy to maintain his power while also dramatically increasing his strikeout rate or his contact rate, that's abnormal. That's something to keep an eye on as potential real improvement. Not that Justin Smoke's going to be this the rest of the season, but it's at least an indicator that this probably could reflect some level of improvement on his end rather than just being, a few fly balls having to scrape over the wall.
Well, we live, of course, at a time, whether it's earlier with a player like Jose Bautista. Of course, Josh Donaldson is an evangelist for a changing swing mechanics, attempting to get the ball in the air more often. Is there any reason to believe? Have you seen any reports regarding Justin Smoke and swing mechanics?
No. I mean, as far as I know, this is basically the same swing Justin Smoke's always had. But I will point out that Jeff Sullivan, back in March, wrote a post for Fangraphs entitled "The Reason for Optimism Regarding Justin Smoke," where he looked at the Statcast numbers, the exit velocity and launch angle, and said, "Here's Justin Smoke's average exit velocity on batted balls last year, and his average launch angle. Here's all the other players with very similar numbers. All those players are good hitters. The most similar was Freddie Freeman, who might be the top five hitter in baseball right now. You could even argue top three." And then there were a bunch of other good hitters. I think the aggregate for all the hitters within that range was something like a 120 WRC plus, and Smoke was the only guy below average. And so the point that Jeff made is, like, look, guys like this tend to be good hitters, and why isn't Justin Smoke one? We don't know, but maybe this suggests that there's more production in there than we would expect. You don't necessarily want to just look at averages because the spread matters too. So, if you have a 17 degree launch angle, it's better if, like, both balls are 17 than if one is 0 and one is 34. But in general, it seems like maybe Justin Smoke, a former first round pick, a former top 10 prospect, has underachieved to this point in his career. We see Yonder Alonso kind of having a breakout year at age 30 over in Oakland. Perhaps this is just something where there was more talent in there in Justin Smoke than his performances in the major leagues to this point had suggested, and maybe he's figuring out how to tap into it this year.
Yeah. Oh, okay, well, good stuff. Now, we're going to look at the week ahead very briefly in a moment. However, Dave Cameron, I would like to here propose this will be an experiment, but perhaps it will become a new, very brief segment on the Blue Jays Pitch Talks podcast. And that is, for me, the host, to highlight briefly one prospect in the system. Now, in so doing, I would like to take advantage not of looking at one of the top prospects, but a player who was actually signed as a free agent, a minor league free agent during the offseason, and that is, and I should say, and was recently promoted and given his first major league plate appearances, and that's Mike Ullman. Mike Ullman is interesting, Dave Cameron, not only because he's a Blue Jays catcher, one who's taking some time in order to address some injury problems the team has had at the catcher position, but recently, a writer for Fangraphs.com, Chris Mitchell, who runs a projection system for prospects only, published his most improved hitting prospects list at Fangraphs.com. The system Chris Mitchell uses is called Cato. It's a reference to an obscure minor league prospect. But the idea is he looks at essentially all prospects since prospect lists have been coming out, attempts to he looks at and has regressed their minor league stats, and now he uses that information to look at current prospects to get a better understanding of what their future performances might be. One of the most improved prospects in all of the minor leagues is Mike Ullman. As says Mitchell previously, organizational catcher with a touch of power, Ullman has found new life with the Blue Jays this year. He recorded a slash line at AAA of .246/.388/.594, which has helped him earn a promotion. His strikeout rate is very high. It was 33% even in the minor leagues, which is usually a red flag. However, combined with the power and Ullman's patience, the numbers come out well. And, of course, I would say first, a catcher doesn't really have to hit that much for him to be useful if he's providing adequate defense at the catcher spot. Isn't that right?
Yeah, the baseline for catcher offense is pretty low, as the evidenced by the fact that Luke Maley is a major league catcher.
Right, so there's not a lot of burden placed on the bat. Now, Ullman is he's maybe another sort of catcher, and one I think that's actually not uncommon at the minor league level. One who's, it's not really necessarily his offensive skills that are the question. It's whether he can translate the defensive skills to the major league level. Now, offensively, if you take a look, just as I think both of us are doing, his offensive numbers have actually been pretty decent. He has, I think, off air you described it maybe as a sort of Mike Napoli skill set.
Yeah, the walks, strikeouts, homers from a fringy defensive catcher. That's Mike Napoli in a nutshell.
Right, and I want to be clear, I'm not attempting to provide any scouting-type analysis here, but there is a wealth of quantitative analysis available for minor leaguers even. What the information suggests to us, there was a concern among scouts, there has been a concern among scouts, just on a basic level, that Mike Ullman might be too big to catch. He's 6'5", 240, and he has long arms.
Big dude.
Which might provide some length to his swing and make it harder for him to make contact. But I think also we don't really see that many 6'5 catchers around, do we?
No. Yeah, almost none.
Who are the tallest catchers around right now? I mean, Matt Wieters is tall.
Matt Wieters, I think, is 6'4". Joe Mauer is 6'4".
Mm-hmm.
That's basically it.
That's one cause for concern. The caught-stealing numbers have never really been a huge issue for Ullman, but there is a question as to essentially whether he can get low enough. Listeners may or may not be aware, but there are catching metrics available, both by way of Baseball Prospectus. They have one methodology for contending with it, both at the Major League and also the minor league level. Stat Corner is another site, I believe, facilitated by Matthew Carruth, who formerly wrote for Fangraphs, and he has a report for Major Leaguers. Just in his first very early appearances here, Ullman has produced slightly below average numbers in terms of framing at the major league level. However, as a minor leaguer, he was never great, but he was also not particularly bad. So perhaps there's some hope for that. Ullman's an interesting character for that reason and unique. And I think that using the word unique here correctly, in that he is quite large, quite tall for a catcher. So it will be interesting to see, if nothing else, whether he's able to manage his height and help out the Blue Jays, at least until their catching situation is a bit healthier.
Yeah.
Dave Cameron.
He's not going to take Russ Martin's job, but, you know, not the worst thing in the world if you have a backup catcher who can occasionally hit a home run.
Right. Right. Perhaps could pinch hit. Although managers are really loath to use a backup catcher.
And I think with Steve Pierce on the DL, like, the Blue Jays are currently running a two-man bench, so probably not a lot of pinch hitting going on.
No, that's a good point, too. Now, Dave Cameron, let us turn our attention from this question of prospects to the future in a different way, which is the week ahead for the Toronto Blue Jays. Now, because we're recording on a Tuesday today instead of a Monday, that week has already begun. It began yesterday, May 15th, when the Blue Jays were visited by Bartolo Colon and his Atlanta Braves. It was a start by Mike Bolsinger, and it did not go particularly well.
As Mike Bolsinger starts or want to do.
Right, yeah. So the Jays allowed 10 runs, and it did not work out particularly well. However, one has to think, now, they still have three games left against an Atlanta team that's not particularly strong. I assume that that you would be optimistic about their chances of taking 2 out of 3, for example.
Yeah, they should not lose the series to the Braves.
What is it? Now, they will be facing Jaime Garcia today, Tuesday. Jaime Garcia has been, in the past, he's been excellent when he's been healthy. He appears to be healthy. Is he excellent, though?
No, his stuff has really seemed to have gone the wrong way, and he was already living with kind of fringy stuff, living off a cutter. Now that he's kind of down a couple ticks, he appears to be nibbling more than he used to, so now he's a higher walk guy, and he doesn't strike enough guys out or get enough ground balls to make that work.
Okay. The next day will be Mike Fultonevich, whose name is nearly impossible to spell. He does not at all match the description you just gave of Garcia. He throws very hard, but very possibly command is a bit of an issue for him.
Yeah, it's one of those guys where it's like, oh, good stuff, but maybe belongs in the bullpen.
Right, yeah, as it's sometimes true. And it's actually, I think Fultonevich might be an interesting case where it really is command as opposed to control. He's recorded decent walk rates, but for what he has in terms of physical tools, it does not seem to translate particularly well. Major league level. But in any case, it would appear, given the next three games, that this team has an opportunity to make up again some more of that ground that they lost. They will also face Baltimore in the sort of weekend series. Baltimore is interesting. If you look at the playoff odds right now in the American League East, of course, the Orioles have a considerably better record. They're 6.5 games ahead of the Blue Jays. But in terms of expected wins for the rest of the season, the Blue Jays are actually like 50 points higher in terms of winning percentage. So what is it that the projections don't see or do see in this Baltimore team that, at least for the moment, is not reflected in their win-loss record?
Yeah, the Orioles have been doing this for a couple of years where they've been winning more games than their run differential or their kind of WOBA differential, their batting average, on-base percentage, slugging percentage would indicate. They've been one of the most clutch teams in baseball. We don't generally think this is a skill, but certainly there could be something to the fact that they've generally had a very good bullpen. Zach Britton is an excellent closer, has helped them win a bunch of one-run games the last few years. Zach Britton's currently hurt, and Brad Brock, his closer replacement, has not been Zach Britton-level excellent, but they're still being very clutch anyway. It's one of those things that's a little bit of a mystery. Our projections basically think that clutch regresses very heavily to the mean, so we don't necessarily care, or our projections don't necessarily care that they've won a bunch of games early in the season. It looks at it and says that this is still basically an average team.
Right. So as you say, that has been the sort of report on the Blue Jays for a while now. Whether it's, you know, if it is due to relief, then perhaps the absence of Zach Britton will allow other teams like the Blue Jays to take advantage of it and might render the Orioles a little bit less capable of outperforming their peripheral numbers. I will say that the basic win probabilities that we have projected FanGraphs have the Blue Jays projected at less than 50% to win any of the games, and in particular the game between Mike Bolsinger and Kevin Gausman. That looks like the hardest to win. Aaron Sanchez's start against Chris Tillman, the most optimistic at 49%. So that is that's the week ahead for these Toronto Blue Jays. Again, a good chance with Atlanta probably to get some games back, and would probably be happy to take at least one from Baltimore, it would seem like, given the numbers. Although ideally more, Dave Cameron.
Yeah, win as many as possible.
Yeah, win as many as possible. That seems to be a good strategy. Hey, well, Dave Cameron, you have fulfilled your obligation to the Pitch Talk Blue Jays podcast.
Hooray.
Hooray. All right, well, we'll say bye to you. Thank you, Dave Cameron. That is Dave Cameron. He's the managing editor of FanGraphs. I'm Carson Cistulli. And this has been the Pitch Talks Blue Jays podcast.